This podcast is made possible by the generosity of supporting members. Please visit dharmaocean.org to learn more about becoming a supporting member. You are listening to the Dharma Ocean podcast. In this talk, Reggie discusses how the meditating with the body practices help us open to the wisdom of emotions. Depression, for instance, can challenge our thinking and can illuminate what is false, inviting us into a profound journey of individuation. This talk was given at the 2006 Meditating with the Body retreat held in Crestone, Colorado.
I want to just mention a couple more things about depression. Something that Chogyam Trungpa said that when I first met him in a talk, actually, that really struck me. He said, of all of these samsaric states, in other words, of all of the states of non-enlightenment, depression is the most dignified because it's the most real and it's the most accurate. The most dignified of all the samsaric states. You see what life really holds, ultimately. You see things as they are. You see the wishful thinking and how empty it is that we all indulge in all the time. The other thing I wanted to say is, you know, the spiritual journey often requires us to go against the grain of our upbringing, our conventional culture, and our own expectations. And the spiritual journey often requires us to do things that from a conventional viewpoint seem insane, truly. And I'll come back to my, you know, favorite example, which is Jesus, basically. You know, the man went through his life. He was incredibly filled with the Spirit. The, you know, ultimate reality flowed through him in an unimpeded way. And, you know, his disciples were basically riffraff. I mean, they were criminals and poor people and the outcasts of society. And because of how open he was to the ultimate, the healing energy of the ultimate came through to these people. And they became completely devoted to him. And he came to a certain point in his life where his journey became life-threatening. It wasn't just that people didn't like him because the Romans were chasing him and the temple hierarchy was after him too. And they basically wanted to get rid of this guy because he said things that they didn't want to have said. I mean, he spoke the truth in a society of filled with lies. The Romans on the one side, the temple hierarchy on the other in Jerusalem. And he got to a point where his journey took him to the cross, to death by crucifixion. And he was offered, you know, he could have weaseled out of it really easily if he just said a few things differently. But the man stuck with his journey and he died. And you see, our problem is, okay, maybe you're kind of really depressed and you can't really function, become a homeless person. Can you guarantee me that there's something fundamentally wrong with that? In terms of the ultimate spiritual journey that you're on, can you guarantee that? No. Is being functional in this society a guarantee that things are okay? Somamfu Somme, who's the wife of Maladoma Somme, was the wife, I think they're divorced now. You know, I worked with both of them for quite a number of years some time ago. And she one time said, when she was doing the workshop, she said, if you live in this society and you're not depressed, there is something terribly, terribly wrong with you. You see, so this is another whole different way of looking at it. It's The The spiritual journey is not about being socially acceptable and successful in this society. There were people in Nazi Germany, in order to be successful, they had to do some funny things to their minds. And it would have been better if they hadn't done those funny things in order to fit in. Would have been better, I'm quite certain. You know, we don't know how this society is going to be viewed later. It's important to take a very big view and not to be too locked into the immediate values, you know, of our context, because if you're too locked in, you might end up doing a lot of things that aren't really necessarily that good. And I think that, you know, in our lineage, every culture has its short-sightedness. You know, modern culture is not, in that way, not any different from any other culture. And the way you deal with it is you spend a lot of time alone. And even people who are family people go up into the mountains, you know, for periods of time, a couple times a year, maybe once a year for a long retreat. And what you find out in retreat is that your mind and your body balance themselves over a period of time, become very balanced. And you might have to go through some very tough shit, basically, to arrive at that point of balance. And you might have to have a lot of what you think destroyed. Everything is at stake when you spend time alone in that way practicing. And the all of the darkness that is needing to come up is going to come up. And so we have to be very easy with this whole thing about what states of mind are workable and which ones aren't. And we have to realize that a lot of the non-workability of many states of mind has much more to do with our culture than it has to do with us. We live in a culture where you're expected to be at work, you know, during this time, available and productive. And there is no time to go through depression. There is no time to deeply, deeply reflect on the kind of person you are and what you've done with your life and how you impact other people. There's no time. So I think rather necessarily than blaming ourselves, we should look at the culture that we live in and realize much of the non-workability that we may feel has a lot to do with the culture that we live in right now. You know, when people are depressed about school, you know, one possibility is they have an organic disorder that needs medication, and the other possibility is that school's fucked up. And they should be depressed. I would say almost every student that comes to Naropa has been through periods of major depression in school, and they were smart enough to figure out that what is being presented as education is basically indoctrination into consumer culture, and it's completely meaningless. Or, you know, feeding some professor's ego trip about something or other. And they become depressed, they drop out of school often for years, and then they come to Naropa and they realize, hey, you know, it doesn't have to be like that. If you spend time in traditional cultures, you realize that people go through all kinds of things and there's room for it. There's room, but there's no room here. People I've lived in India twice and second time for a year, and what I loved about that culture is it's so slow, and I'm not talking about the urban culture, but the rural culture. It's so slow. There's so much room and so much time that you can actually go through and be who you are and go through your cycles, and it's accommodated. There's room for it. So I just wanted to mention that point, that thinking that modern culture should define the standard for us, not necessarily true. So I think, you know, it's very important for us, coming back to the body, that when, you know, depression is a somatic state, at least in my experience, you're very, very, very grounded in your body. And you can't really come up with anything, you know. And you can't get on the merry-go-round of modern culture. You just can't do it. And sometimes there's a huge amount of intelligence in that depression. And the depression is telling us something. And maybe it's something that we don't want to hear. I understand that. But nevertheless, the intelligence is often irrefutable. I mentioned yesterday that when we encounter a particular state of mind, you know, when we start thinking, the body seizes up. I don't know if you notice this, but this is something that I'd like you to track over the next 5 months. That when your body is peaceful and all of a sudden you start thinking about something, and particularly something that has some charge for you, the body will seize up. And what's happened there is you are suddenly holding on for dear life. And what that does is it numbs the ability to feel. And you are, at that point, by default, you're in your head and you're thinking. There's no, you know, the experience is factored out. One of the things you will notice as you work with your body is that the more you're in your body, the less you're thinking. But the more you're thinking, the less you're in your body. Thinking is separating, dissociating. So the body work is to learn how to live in the body, and at that point the thinking process becomes peripheral and marginal when you're actually in your body. One very important point is that this process of the posture of meditation, and you know, I would include in that lying down posture and sitting up posture, these are the three things I mentioned, which are alignment, relaxation, and resiliency. These three principles go through all work with the body, and I'm kind of using the posture of meditation as a metaphor to talk about actually how to be with the body. And the other thing is they go back and forth. In other words, you work with your alignment, but then the more you relax, the more you actually begin to discover a more natural alignment. And then the more natural your alignment, the more you can actually feel the movement in your body, the natural resiliency and movement and flow of the body itself. And the more you do that, the more you relax. The more you relax, the better your alignment. So even though I'm presenting these in sequence, first alignment, then relaxation, then resiliency, actually we are constantly working back and forth between all of them. And the important point is that we, with all of these practices that I'm showing you, and you know, this, during this intensive, I'm showing you things. We're not actually practicing them for any length of time. And that's important because you need to have a feeling for what they are. So when you get them, when they come up on the, in the program and you have 2 weeks to practice them, you have some kind of transmission from me about what they are. But the important point is that each one of them is that through the two-week unit, you'll internalize what's going on. If you actually practice through that whole 2 weeks, it'll become part of you. And then you don't have to think about it. Then when you're sitting, you're going to have a natural sense of your body, and you'll be working in that way without even a thought. And that's really what we're looking for. I mentioned a couple of times that the real transformation comes through the sustained practice. So I want to just say that once again, that you have about an hour a day that you need to do as part of this next 5 months. It's very, very important you do it, because that's where the transformation will come. It comes through your discoveries, through internalizing and integrating that kind of awareness that the practice brings, and then it builds on itself, and then you have that as just part of your natural awareness. When we start doing this work, we're basically living pretty much up here, and I think it's pretty much true of most people who live in this modern world. But the more you practice, the more the communication opens between the body and the mind, and then at a certain point, the body actually, you look to the body when you're in situations, and the body kind of indicates what's needed. If you're very sensitive, somebody can hold up an apple in front of your body, and your body reacts immediately, and you'll see whether you want it or not. You just know. Or you're with somebody, and they're lying to you, and instead of thinking, well, you know, I feel funny, but basically this is my friend, so everything's okay, you know they're lying. You know, the body is unbelievably sensitive and aware, and the information that the body brings to us is 100% reliable. And again, what we're working on today is relaxation. It's learning how to be in the body, but actually let go at the same time. Relaxation is a term that we use, but really what it's talking about is letting go. It's about letting go, letting go. And so the process of relaxation is really letting go of the clenching, and strangely enough, it's letting go of the thinking too. So when we say relax, we're really talking about letting go and surrendering. Surrender, surrender. Surrendering to the body, surrendering to what we feel, surrendering to the earth. I do think that childbirth, you know, the fact that women have periods that they have to relate to, there's a certain kind of surrender to the body that is endemic in that situation that men don't have. So I think, you know, men have to realize we actually, for the whole surrender thing, there's some physiological things there that we don't necessarily have some aid and some support and some assistance. And I think that also for men, the whole boundary of surrender is a very difficult one. Not for all men, but for many men. So that's an interesting point, that I think women have their own experience to draw on, and they know where surrender is. When you're having your periods, there's no choice. There's no drug you can take that's going to change that experience. Or when you're in childbirth or carrying a baby, you know, there's a kind of natural surrender that happens. So, yeah, and with men, I don't know. I don't think we really quite have that gateway.
To download more of Reggie's teachings, find out about upcoming retreats, and to explore a variety of audio listening guides to assist you on your spiritual journey, please visit dharmaocean.org. Our music is by Jeff Beal and Nawang Ketchog from the album Tibet, Cry of the Snow Lion.